Well, there you have it. You're up and about. My system always for these early morning risers is black coffee, tons of it. But I want to discuss with my doctor who is with me, my personal physician, Dr. Lara Dungan, and my personal barrister, Teresa Lowe, because I get myself into so much trouble so often. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning, George.
Now, yeah, great to be here.
Most people probably think you know what's coming up next. So just to prove that you don't know what's coming up next,
uh-oh,
I thought I would ask you both the question.
Okay.
I start with you, Teresa.
Oh, dear. Okay.
It's a medical question. That's why I'm starting with you. Prostate cancer has been this year the number one killer of people, replacing breast cancer, right? Now, my view is, and I'm asking your opinion, there's nobody going out wearing pink football boots for prostate cancer. There's nobody going out with pink things on their jackets. Agree or not?
It's the biggest killer of men.
It's absolutely
Well, obviously it doesn't apply to
the
women.
Biggest killer but, in the country. First of all, heart disease is the biggest killer by a long shot.
It's the biggest cancer killer.
It's not. Lung cancer, colorectal cancer.
I thought skin cancer was.
Yeah, skin minor skin cancer. Oh, there's like you're saying the prostate cancer has gone up in the ranks and it's killing more men now than it used to, I think is what you're suggesting.
That may well be what I'm suggesting.
But you're not wrong, George. It's a very serious disease and it is a very serious killer. And there isn't the same huge public awareness or the same campaigns because it tends to be older men. And it's not that it's a man-specific thing. It's that it's an older population. And I think that's a really big problem.
But Lara, I know young men, very young men, that suffer from this. So maybe this is something that we should be highlighting and talking about all the time. What are the symptoms? Are there symptoms?
Yeah, of course there are. It is rare in young men. It can, of course, happen, but it is rare. And I think that's probably why it doesn't get much publicity, because it tends to be the cancers that kill young people that get a lot of publicity, like breast or even testicular or things like that. There are symptoms. It tends to be, if you imagine what it is, your prostate is like a big apple surrounding the tube.
I thought it was a big golf ball.
Fair enough, a golf ball is any sort of
small apple.
An apple is a bit big now.
It can be, well, it depends how big it can get. It actually can get very
big. Oh no, I agree. But Teresa, the thing is, so many of my friends, sadly, who have died of prostate cancer, and they all had symptoms, right? And one of the symptoms is blood when you go to the toilet, right? Be one, yes,
yeah. That could be one of the symptoms, it can be, yeah, absolutely.
And they ignore it.
They did nothing about it. Isn't that a very male thing?
Correct.
Where they don't want to go to a doctor.
Whereas I'm just...
And that's a shame.
I'm a pussycat and I rush to my GP at the first sign of anything.
But this is why you're in great shape and very healthy. And you said to us last week, you said, my blood pressure's perfect, my this, that and the other. You're very well-minded, obviously by the lovely English.
How's your prostate?
But also
will
your...
Would you?
Absolutely not.
Sorry, the program has just been a conversation.
Oh my God.
That's a showstopper.
Did you really mean that?
No, for a second. Not for a second. No, there are symptoms. And any man over 50 who has even one incidence of blood in their urine needs to go straight to their GP. It could be benign. It could just be a urinary tract infection. But it also may not be. And you have to go to your doctor if that happens.
All right. Okay.
Is it embarrassing for
men?
Is it humiliating?
It's a rectal exam.
Teresa, why are you asking her about is it embarrassing for men? Why
well, you've never had to do it, have you?
Every year.
Yeah, but you've never had to do it. You've had to have it done, but you've never had to do it, my friend.
No.
Oh, you're talking about embarrassing for the doctor or for the...
No, it's not embarrassing for the doctor, certainly not.
It's
not
awful,
a nice
George.
Exam.
It's awful.
I must say, now, wouldn't encourage me to do it as a recreational pastime, but... my doctor, Fergus Brady, I go to Fergus, he comes in, he says, bend over, George, and he does it and he says, golf ball. And we're all happy.
Okay.
If he said apple,
you'd
we
be
wouldn't
worried.
Be happy.
Right. Be worried.
Nowadays, see, they can tell so much from bloods. So he'll take my
PSA.
Series of bloods and they can tell a huge number of things like diabetes or STDs or whatever the heck it is.
STDs, so, in fairness.
And then he'll do a couple of other tests as well, like it'll tell my cholesterol and all that. So the thing really about it is, men are appalling at going to doctors.
Yeah.
And they should go. And that's my point, that... prostate cancer gets none of the publicity and everything that breast cancer gets. That's my only point.
I know, but the problem is, in the grand scheme of things, it's not considered one of the sexy cancers. Breast cancer gets young women. Leukemia gets young children. Testicular cancer gets young women, or young men, obviously. Oops. And that's what gets the money, and that's what gets the funding. And it's a crying shame.
Is it something
shame.
That if it's found early is eminently treatable?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, then shouldn't we be absolutely
But sometimes it's not worth treating.
Men or their wives or partners or girlfriends.
What do you mean it's not worth treating?
80% of men over 80 have prostate cancer. 90% of men over 90, and the vast majority of them die with it, not of it. So it's not always a good thing to
I
know.
I can't wait to be 80 so that I can have prostate
there's
cancer.
There's an 80% chance you have prostate cancer, yeah.
You're getting after checked 80. All the time and there's no sign, so that's great. And that's because you're getting checked all the time, that you have yes. that comfort.
I mean, my problem really is with my dentist. Like, I'm like everybody in my generation. I lost all my teeth before my first communion or maybe my confirmation. I can't remember. I have a much more... What about this thing? The Patrick's Day floats, Teresa.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And there were floats about the Lidl breakdown, and of course everybody, because everybody now gets upset about something, everybody get upset.
Not everybody. Apparently there were three parades that depicted the unfortunate incident in Tallaght, the breaking into, some say Lidl, I call it Lidl as well, which was awful. Some would say that the putting on this, you know, that where they show the
wreck of the building,
and the building, and there were even Gardaí on some of the parades, that it was in very bad taste. I think it was in very bad taste. You know,
but
30
what were
people,
they trying to show, Teresa, do you think? What was the purpose of the float, do you think?
It was just probably some kind of humour. I mean, there really? Is a glorification at the moment of crime, isn't there? You know, we can go back to Love Hate. We can talk about, you know, even Damo and Ivor. And it's all very amusing and everything, but I don't think this was amusing. I think it wasn't very poor taste.
I'm not good with some. I think the last time I saw a St. Patrick's Day parade, I think St. Patrick was actually in it.
He probably was.
That's a good point too.
I think he was the Grand Marshal.
This is about being Irish, yeah. And is this what we are? Is this what being Irish means?
I think that's a good point, Teresa. I think that's a great point, Teresa makes. Teresa normally is here because she's British.
And normally doesn't make a great point.
Teresa brings sort of
reasonably, logically.
All that stuff, yeah.
Charm.
Gravitas. Humor. That's the word okay. I'm looking for. Teresa
nice.
Brings gravitas.
I'll accept that.
Yeah. I'm staying with Teresa, but I want to bring both of you in. This ant fella, he's drunk in charge of a motor vehicle and there seems to be sympathy for him. Why is there sympathy
allegedly.
For him, Teresa? Allegedly drunk in charge.
Allegedly. I think he's been charged, but, you know, it's presumption of innocence. I'm
all
sure
right,
that applies
okay.
in the UK as well as here. There is sympathy for him. I think there's huge sympathy for him because Ant McPartlin, part of Ant and Dec, he's somebody that we've seen for about 30 years now.
Ah,
on
no,
the television.
Wait
a minute. He always comes across as a very down-to-earth, nice kind of fella. Sadly, he has some kind of problems and he has addiction problems by the looks of things. But it is a fact that he went into rehab and he gave interviews about it before he went to the jungle to do the celebrity thing. And I remember thinking at the time, he was only a short while in there and he went out to the jungle. That's not long enough to recover.
Mm. But there was a pressure of himself doing a show like this.
Yeah, but
a pressure.
There's £30 million in this takeaway show.
Yeah.
The sponsor, we won't name who the sponsor is, but look, you're talking about £30 million.
Yeah.
So there must be pressure. But the most important thing is, first of all, it might be a wake-up call for him as well.
But
you know, this might be somebody could have died.
There are two female doctors in my life. One is Dr. Lara Dungan, and the other one presents a lunchtime show on News Talk. But Ciara Kelly is almost unrelenting about drink driving. Mm. Right? Are you the same? Like, are you?
He is. Yeah. I mean, look. Whether it's Anne
McFarland, is that because you're a doctor, or is that because
it's because
you're
I'm
Lara
a human
Dungan?
Being, and yeah. he drove a car intoxicated. He crashed into two cars, one of which had a small child in it that had to go to hospital. Like, this is whether it's Anne McFarland who presents Saturday Night, whatever it is, or whether it's Stephen Smith down the road. There is absolutely no excuse. I agree completely that alcoholism is a disease, and I think that it's a crying shame that the poor man was forced back into work. And I think it's all a very sad story. But then he got behind the wheel intoxicated and he loses any sympathy. The only difference is that child didn't get badly injured and didn't die. And
thank
no
God.
One would be on his side if that had happened.
But do you think
it
happened
appalling.
To somebody else, there'd be all this, obviously, there wouldn't be all this media exposure. Is that
well,
not in itself a punishment?
Yeah, there wouldn't, because they're not famous. But I mean, like the punishment, I know that he's going to be feeling bad about it and racking his, you know, racked with guilt, but he deserves to be. He got behind the wheel intoxicated, and it's appalling.
There's a really interesting thing here. It's me versus my children. There is a generational thing about drink and driving.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And on Mother's Day, Inga was in London with our other daughter, and my daughter took us out dinner, and we went to a smashing place called The Avenue down in Maynooth, of all places, right? So George drives down, like, you know, and Michelle absolutely, rigidly watched me that I didn't take a drink.
Yeah.
You know, it is generational.
If
you think, like, the turnover in golf clubs or tennis clubs or whatever the heck it is has plummeted in many cases because the next generation don't have 6 points and get behind the wheel of a car. Do you know what I mean?
Which is that, a good thing.
No, I'm
but why don't these golf clubs, with the price that you're paying for membership, why don't they organise transport home
I think my children are
members.
Fantastic. And all everybody of that generation is. I'm not saying I'd drink 6 points to get into a car. Of course I wouldn't. But what I'm saying is you do have a different attitude.
It is very different these days. It is very different. I don't know a single person who would ever do it. And I do know people of an older generation who would. I haven't got a friend
but
who would
do it. But it's not about being drunk, like. My generation said, Asher, I only had a pint of shandy or I only had a glass of wine. Whereas my son would say, I mean, that's what I'm trying to get across here.
Well, if you're over the limit, even a small bit over the limit, you know, you might be in trouble with your insurance. You have to be
what
very
do you think,
careful,
what
even
do you
if it's not
think
your fault in an accident.
So if a doctor on the medical council register is found drink driving, they can be struck off. But it doesn't happen if you're a barrister or an accountant or... What do you think about the fact that you can be struck off for something in your personal life that you can't be in other professions?
I didn't know that, but I don't think there's any explanation ever for somebody who's drunk.
No, and you're right. You're dead right.
Never
you're dead right. So it just shouldn't happen.
Find other ways of getting home or you don't go out.
Yeah.
No, but the point about being struck off is interesting. Lara's point is, if you're an accountant, you're not going to be struck off.
No.
If you're a barrister, you're not, but you are if you're a doctor.
Maybe you should be if you're an accountant or a barrister. I don't mind that doctors have struck off.
No, but where does all this end like? Do bus drivers get struck off? Do you know what I mean?
But maybe they should. Maybe we
no,
should all.
No, they shouldn't. No.
What about pilots?
The law.
Well, the pilots. Remember that drunk guy? Wasn't there some horrendously drunk pilot that got on a plane a little while? Absolutely, like, off his rocker drunk. Not even like he'd had a couple. Like, he'd had something like a bottle of vodka and he got on to fly and I think they had to arrest him or something.
Well, there was a great scandal. I'm going back about 35 years now. Not only the pilots, but the cabin crew, in those days, all women, of course, you know, they would go on a bender before the flight.
Oh my God.
And then so everybody.
Everybody was one over the age.
I don't mind too much about the cabin crew, but I do think I mind about the pilot there.
You'd be in row.
This is it. And in fact, when I'm on a plane, you know the way you might say a prayer. Just to be safe, I say a prayer for the pilot because if he's having a bad day or she's having a bad day, we're all in trouble.
Yeah.
Can I go? That's a very interesting thing. How many of us say a prayer on an airplane before we take off?
I do.
I do too.
Well, what do you look as if for a second there was a chance I was going to? Oh yes, I pray to our Lord Father Jesus Christ to make sure He brings me down safe.
I knew she'd admit that. I knew.
Finally, my religious
prayer. Do you say a prayer when it's taxiing down the
road? No, I absolutely don't. I switch my phone to airplane mode and I take out my book like everybody else.
And if the plane swerved, would you say Jesus?
I'd probably use Jesus as a curse word.
No,
not as a prayer, but as a curse word.
No. There's this great phrase, there are no atheists in a foxhole. You know, it was like in war, when the bombs are flashing, everybody gets religion and says, dearest Jesus, don't let me die.
I don't think that's true anymore. I'm sure it was a gut reaction 50 years ago, genuinely, and I believe you. But it would not be. I'm not trying to be sort of contrary, but I genuinely wouldn't. In an emergency, I would just be thinking practically.
I always
a lot of
say,
people do, even if they've lost their faith, they do.
I don't think there's any harm.
Times,
they
do. Don't get
me
wrong.
I always say, dearest Jesus, get me there on time. You know, get me there wherever
I'm
going.
That's just pulling your weight a
no,
little
but
bit.
Do you know what's really sad?
I ask for parking spaces.
See, lads,
I ask the angel guardian, would you please find me a space? And the weird thing is, I always do. Hey, listen, you were talking about the World War I, was it?
The who?
Foxholes.
Do you remember? And I'm sure you remember because you're older.
Because you're very
old. Was there an episode where soldiers saw angels fighting
in World War One. Yeah,
what was the place? Was it a French?
Ah, no, there was quite a lot of evidence of them seeing
evidence.
But there'd be stories.
Accounts of.
Thank you. That's very good. But can I say one thing about prayer? Before the M8 M7 going to Cork, right? When you would drive down and you'd have to go through the Corral, all these places, right? Glanmire is just outside Cork, and you come down Glanmire, and there's a beautiful statue of the Virgin Mary, right? Every single time I would stop the car, I would pull in, and I'd say a prayer to the Virgin Mary for getting me safe to Cork. Every time. And now with the M8 M7, there's no Glanmire stop.
Oh, right. That was a tradition for you.
Can you still pray in your car? Can you pray for a parking space when you get to Cork?
No, you see, you're diminishing my... Absolute
you try it.
Faith.
Next time you're looking for a car park space, try this and then come down and tell us.
Look, I think faith is wonderful if you have it, and I think it's lovely, and I have nothing against anyone who has it. I think it's great.
But you were all this against this. We told you about the nun. We told you about the nun who went to Lourdes, who was in a terrible state. Mm. And she went to Lourdes and she was cured.
You did,
and you bounced it off as if it was of no regard.
Yeah, because I can respect her faith, but she should also respect my belief in scientific values and my lack of religious faith. I think that if I'm expected to believe and respect the faith of others, they should
respect
my atheist
totally
beliefs
what
as
you're
well.
Saying
I have
too.
Nothing against. My grandmother's extremely religious, and it feels that she will go to heaven. She will see her husband. It's the only thing that's keeping her going. I think it's wonderful. It's just not my belief. It's not my feeling.
But that's why she wears a mask all the time when she's with patients, because they don't know who she is. If they knew who she was, to be saying, that's your one on Saturday morning who
that's
doesn't say any prayer.
That's it. And then they'll ask you to say a prayer for them.
I know. Look.
But haven't we reached a terrible state, Teresa? Now, we have this raging atheist on the programme, right? And 20 years ago, if she spouted this kind of stuff, she would have been banned on the radio.
I don't know if she would have been allowed on in the first place.
No, about being banned from the radio?
Probably would have been.
I don't know about that.
Well,
but,
30 years
But here's
ago,
somebody then. Who actually is one of the most compassionate, loving people that
Thank you,
in the very short time that I know you.
Who are you talking about?
Well, she's not talking about you, George, for the love of God.
Dr. Lara.
There, for the love of God. There it is. There's my prayer.
There you go. No.
That's all you'll get from me.
George, you've converted her.
There was a fella, I can't remember his name. Delaney, I think his name was. But he was a newsreader in RTE. They appointed him, right? So all the newsreaders in RTE, and go back 50 years now, right? All the newsreaders would be, well, this morning there was rain in County Waterford, you know?
And they, was he from Cork, was he?
And they appointed this fellow Delaney. And he said, well, this morning the
Don Coburn.
Weather... No. Way before all that. It was on radio. And he said, well, this morning the weather was auspicious in County Cork. He was sacked.
For
having a posh accent.
Oh,
for being posh. And now you can't get on the airways if
and
you have a Dublin accent.
Like the BBC. And,
he was sacked for being posh.
Oh, my God.
You know, Terry Wogan used to train in the continuity announcers on radio.
Yes, that's right.
And he always, their very first announcement, and they'd have a piece of paper and the hand would be shaking. And while they were speaking live, he'd set it on fire.
Over in the BBC or...?
No, in RTE.
In RTE.
He was in RTE.
I'd say he was a gas man.
But in the early days of radio, and particularly during World War II on the BBC, they would read the news in full evening dress.
On the radio.
On the radio.
I can barely get my clothes on for the Saturday morning. I'm usually coming in my pyjamas.
And your man said, hello, this is the 6 o'clock news with Alva Rodell. And he'd be in full regalia.
Like a full tuxedo or something. Gosh.
Evening dress, which meant white tie and tails, not a tuxedo.
And you couldn't see them, isn't it funny? And now, of course, you see everybody on radio with webcams and tweeting and all that sort of stuff.
I think, though, that there's something to be said for that kind of dress because it's... I mean, obviously there's sense in not having like ties in hospitals and things like that because they carry germs. But I do think that neat, respectful dress in a lot of different industries is quite important. It's kind of a uniform. It teaches people that you're respectable. Like I would never wear something... I would never wear tracksuit bottoms into the hospital. You know, you don't like. It's different.
Do you dress differently in the hospital from the way you dress here on a Saturday morning?
No, I just change my shoes. I put my Uggs on. That's all. I would dress like this in the hospital, but unless I was on call, I wear leggings and a scrub top on call.
In my line of work now, if I'm helping somebody for a job interview, I just say, "Will you please go in dressed the very, very best you can?
Absolutely,
correct.
The very best outfit you can put together, and wear if you're a lady." Wear lovely makeup and have your hair and look fantastic, because the confidence it gives you, it is very important. Your image is very important for most things. Look at you, George. You're in a fantastic blue shirt. It looks like it's been ironed to death, and you really look smart today.
I bought it from Ollie Campbell, who was a butterfly half than Johnny Sexton, if you want to talk about that next week.
I definitely do. I'm very excited about this.
I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, it's
next week.
Next week, we have the panel.
The next week that never came for Teresa.
Teresa Lowbarster at Law, Laura Dungan, medical doctor, and me.